3, 2, 1.
Recording.
Oh, that was smooth. Some sync.
Sync. Look flawless. What you get on the episode where you are editing, Shane.
Oh, crap. I am editing this. You're right.
You are editing this.
Okay, let's keep this tidy.
Well, you are now.
Let's keep it real tidy. Tanner.
So what, 30, 40 minutes?
Shane. Yes.
Shane.
Perfect.
You know, you're going to put in the upfront that congratulations to Tanner and his family?
It. Let's do it.
Hey, okay. I think I just did it.
Surprise.
Shane, the show started. This is the content.
Okay, that's a very good point.
Everything is content.
I mean, I'm glad we're having a show this week. I got power back on yesterday morning. I thought that it might actually impact. I mean, it did impact Monday recording. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, 2024.
Not Monday.
Stardate episode 270. I'm going to be editing the next few weeks because our longtime editor, Tanner, T-Baby, he just had his own baby. So congratulations to him and his wife. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
That's great.
But, and you know what's funny, y'all, is when you don't have power, how much you're like, how do I buy solar panels now? How do I power my entire life via the sun?
That's what you want now?
Well, I think it's funny. I think the sun actually does power my house because on the morning of the eclipse, it was like just coming to Denver and my power came back. So the sun being blocked, maybe like it's
eclipse panels.
It's the anti-Clark, anti-Superman.
They're eclipse panels now. That's the new brand.
Ooh. Like, I mean, we only rep Heavy Play here. The
Heavy Play panels.
Yeah. The new card gaming accessories brand, improve your gameplay and your game day. Yes, I'm saying this before I even introduce my co-hosts. Their playmats, deck boxes, and card sleeves feature enhanced ergonomics, mobility, and protection. Equipmag system. Snap things together. Your dice boxes, your deck boxes, your playmat. You make little bundles as you see fit, and you take them apart as you see fit and make new ones. You can carry it all.
I've been told that if you take Heavy Play playmats and you kind of put them on the top of your roof, it actually improves your energy. So.
Yes, it's insulation. It's a solar panel. Don't quote us.
Now, you're going to need like 30, 40 mats, just to be clear. But
that adds up. You can save 15%, however, on those 40 mats at heavyplay.com. Actually, it's 10%.
10%, yeah.
Well, 15% would be nice. If you ask very nicely, they'll probably say no.
I bet if you told Randy you were buying 15 mats to put on top of your house, he'd probably knock another 5% off for you. I'm just saying.
Good chance.
That's probably true.
Send him a note.
So heavyplay.com, use code thedivedown2024 for 10% off that first order. Check your LGS, ask about them there. If you go to any number of upcoming Magic events, you can see the Heavy Play folks over there. Tell them the Dive Down sent you. So this is episode 270 of The Dive Down, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the latest decks, trends, and strategies for the casual spike. I'm Shane here in Denver, Colorado, which is a city that now has power. With me on the line from Massachusetts, it's Devin O'Donnell, a.k.a. Doomwake. Hello, Doom.
That is me. I am in Massachusetts.
How is Massachusetts?
It's doing okay. I didn't get a chance to check out the eclipse. Was too busy doing some taxes the past couple of days.
Well, multi-day taxation.
No, it was just today. But
okay, you know what? I'm going to use this platform to shout out a free tax thing that I found from Cash App. This is not sponsored content, by the way. It's just completely free. Do your taxes online. It ruled. I e-filed. I did everything right there. It was great.
I paid a lot more than free.
Yes.
I imagine, okay, life as a streamer, life as a content creator, I imagine it's slightly more complicated.
I mean, it's just like, so what's nice about Turbo, like I went through TurboTax and what I found out, I thought I was going to have to spend hours looking at bank statements and itemizing everything because I like was lazy and didn't do it last year. But apparently TurboTax just imports all of your bank statements and just itemizes everything for you. So it was actually a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Why don't I do that? Well, maybe some people should use Intuit TurboTax. Some people should use Cash App. Some people, like Dave, probably have like a CPA down the street.
I do have a guy.
Brian or something.
I have a guy. His name is Keith.
That's a good CPA name.
Keith helped me out a lot a couple of years ago, and yeah, I got Keith. Keith makes a video about my taxes when he's done. He brings up an Excel spreadsheet.
No.
He talks about everything that's going on, and he goes through every line item. It's like 9 minutes of content. What? He does it for every person. That's pretty wild.
That's like me going to taking my car to the garage, and they're like, yeah, we're, you know, there's no squids on the manifolds. Brakes look good.
Yeah, he throws some stuff in, though. He knows what he's doing. He even talked. So last year, no beard. This year, Keith had a beard. He spent the first three. It was like a podcast open. He spent three That's minutes funny. Talking about my beard because he saw. I've never met him in person, but I had to send him my ID, yeah. Right, as part of it. And so he was like. He's like, I've been working on this beard for months. And then when I was filing your report, I looked at your ID and I saw that beard. And I was like, now that's a beard.
That's what I say when I see you, Dave. That's funny. A beard. No, that's oh, yeah. With, it's also the Godfather Dave Harrier from yep, Chicago, Illinois.
Let's talk about this week's show because this show is about a lie that we told last week.
It was a lie. It turned out to be a lie. It's funny. Stan tried to make it not a lie. Stan dropped in a few of these cards. From the big score.
Snuck them in.
Yes. Yes. They weren't all spoiled last week, though, and now they all are. And they're pretty weird. Like, there's a lot of weird wild ones that I think are worth talking about. So today, we got to talk about the big score.
We do. Like, so what? Yeah. I guess there's, and we might talk, you know, we might end up talking about Doom. You had like a nice big pure modern tournament this past weekend, right?
I did. Yep. Yeah, that was actually probably the best one that we've run so far. And there was the highest attended. The viewership was like off the charts in terms of normal viewership over the weekend.
Sweet.
And there was also some giveaways done. Excuse me. For part of the MTGO creator program, somebody reached out to me. I didn't even message them. They were just like, "Yo, if you want to do some MTGO giveaways, we got you." So we did some of those too. It was a good time.
That's awesome.
You should have talked to Randy.
Well, it was sponsored by Heavy Play, yeah?
Yes, it was. Actually, the entire top eight prize was all prized out in Heavy Play gift cards. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yep,
very nice.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, thanks, Randy.
Love you, Randy.
So we're going to have some fun talking about that, too. We've been talking a lot about Modern, about Modern Horizons. So why don't we talk about what Modern looks like without Modern Horizons for a minute, just to check in on it and see what's up with that.
Sure. We got some housekeeping first. Let's do this. We have a new patron, Alec L. Thank you, Alec, for becoming a citizen of the Dive Down Nation. We appreciate you. We also have a new review from Great Britain across the pond. Stan leaves. They decide to say something on Apple Podcasts. This is intraocular. It says aging like fine wine. Mm. I think the podcast might be the best it's ever been. I appreciate this. Still adhering to the casual Spike ethos. But the team, meaning Devin, have a huge depth of experience to draw on now. So, yes. I think, yeah, I guess that is the huge depth of experience to draw on. I keep drinking Devin's milkshake. I drink it up.
I mean, you guys have been playing for a long time. You're experienced.
Yeah. I'm experienced with one aspect of Magic matches. That's losing them.
The L. If you want to be like Alec... you can go over patreon.com/thedivedown. A buck a week gets you into the Discord, part of the community, helps keep us going. Going up from there per app gets some swag thrown your way, and you help keep us going even more strongly. If you can rent Magic online cards from Mana Traders, you can use code thedivedown_K4L through the end of April. That'll be in the show notes. You don't have to worry about remembering that. Now don't swerve your car to the side to quickly jot down the Dive Down K4L. And that's about it.
That's right.
So the big score, Dave. Okay. So
what is this?
This is yet another new way of giving us cards, right?
Yeah. Although I don't know if this is one that's going to come back a lot of times. So supposedly the big score is part of an Aftermath style set that was going to come out after Outlaws at Thunder Junction. And then when they saw the reception to Aftermath, they changed it and just put these cards in as the list. So this is the list for Outlaws of Thunder Junction. And what it is 30 mythics. I don't know how this was going to work in a standalone pack set. So maybe that was a lie.
Bonus mythics.
Could you imagine buying a pack where it's a single card, it's just a mythic? I don't know. what they were getting at here. But what it is at any rate, you just go to the,
you're like, oh, I wonder what I'm going to get. Maybe I'll get a one sick mythic.
Yeah. Sick mythic. So anyway, they're all mythics. There's 30 of them. It's the list. Like I said, they are supposed to appear by replacing a common in 1 in 5 packs of Outlaws of Thunder Junction, which means theoretically, I guess if you get 6 or 7 of these in a box, a new, you know, play booster box, I don't know what else to say about that.
Hmm. Now, the 1 in 5, is that specifically for Big Score, or is that just everything that's associated with the list?
So that would include, so from my reading, this is the list and guest, what's it called? Guest fighter? Special guest.
A special guest.
Special guest. So it's the special guest and Big Score that constitute cards that go in the list slot in Outlaws of Thunder Junction. So in 1 in 5 packs, you should get one of those cards.
Yeah, because I was kind of curious as to how rare they were, given that they are mythics, and if any of them has any sort of impact on Standard, and given the distribution, if they're, you know, a lot, if they're harder to open on average than a regular mythic, and there's one that's, you know, popular enough for Standard or potentially Pioneer, these things could go through the roof. If that one specifically, you know,
it is true, and I have been looking at pre-sale prices for some of these. Let me tell you something,
they're already through the roof.
They're kind of high. Okay. I mean, the lowest one here on, so I'm looking at Card Kingdom right now. Maybe I should be looking at a different site. Let me know if I should be looking at a different site. So the cheapest one here is $4 from what I can see, but the most expensive one is already pre-sale. Oh, here's Rest in Peace is $3. There's ones on here that are $40. The most expensive one is $40 already.
Okay. Well, there you go.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't even have that most expensive card on the list to talk about, Dave.
Yeah, we could add it.
I did.
We could add it really easily. Okay. All right, so let's talk about it. A lot of these seem like a commander things, but like we're saying, these are legal and Standard and Pioneer and Modern, of course, and so there's some weird stuff in here that could make some waves. We're just going to talk about it in whatever format we think is interesting. We're going to go Wooburg. At least that's how I started these, was Wooburg. But
towards the end, it probably will not be Wooburg.
Okay. We're just going to go whatever order we want. That. Well, why don't we just draft then? Should we just draft and talk about these until we're tired of it?
Let's talk about perhaps maybe the most polarizing card, or one of the most polarizing cards in Lost Gite.
Okay. Love starting with that. This is not Wooburg at all. We're
I'm drafting now. I'm just drafting on interest. We'll go from top to bottom.
Love it.
This is a 1 mana legendary artifact equipment. Whenever the equipped creature... It has equip 1, by the way. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, put a charge counter on Lost Gite. Remove a charge counter from Lost Gite. You can choose one. You get to untap a target land. Target creature can't block this turn. Or put a 1-1 counter on the equipped creature. So, we know that Gite is a notoriously good card. It's on the Modern Van list. It has a lot of discussion if it would be good or not in Modern right now, but we are getting the Lost version of this card, and it does have some interesting modes, right? Like initially, of course, we saw Aspiring Spike. Everett's reaction to the card says really good. LSV is like, this card's terrible.
He said that, yes. He said anything. He said this card is terrible, and the Urza Saga chat is just cope. With literally the tweet.
Who said that Umezawa's Gite would not be good in Modern right now?
Oh, I don't know if we have a list of those people.
Yeah, let's...
Devin agrees. Yeah.
So, I mean, this has modes. It does stuff. What do you think, Dave?
I mean, I think the place you have to start with this card is that it's searchable by Urza Saga.
It's cheap. And it's cheap.
And just to keep in mind, Umezawa's Gite, 2 casting costs and 2 to equip. Now, it killed creatures. You can do a target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn with a charge counter being removed, and it gets 2 charge counters per damage trigger. However, I think that that's enough to look at. I also think it's super interesting that this can ramp or mess with your lands or turn, you know, your attacks into extra resources, essentially, as opposed to just killing other things. So I think this card is cool. I think it could be interesting in a non-combo-y saga deck, like a Jund mid or like a maybe even like an Escales potentially. But I don't know. What do you think?
What is the sword that untaps lands. Is it sword? Is that why? Is it good?
No.
Feast and Famine.
Yeah, it's the green black sword.
Oh, yes. Feast and Famine is on the short list of like moderately playable swords, right?
Define moderately.
Yeah, at this point in Modern, the only one that I see occasionally now is Fire
Ice. Fire and Ice, yeah.
Yeah.
Devin, what are your thoughts on Lost Jite?
You know, I don't really know. It's a bit strange. So kind of taking back to last week, Stan brought up something. He actually asked me this question where, you know, when you're evaluating new cards, do you look at them in general, where is the card powerful or in, you know, specific contexts? And I think that this card reads like it is somewhat reasonably powerful, but if I'm looking at what deck it goes into, and I think of the playable Urza Saga decks in Modern, the first one is Amulet Titan, which, you know, when you go to the battle phase with Amulet Titan, you're killing them, right? You're attacking the Primeval Titan. So you're not really using this for any small ball stuff. Hammer Time, kind of the same deal. If you're getting in with a big creature, it's you're attacking for 10 or 11, and this is pretty marginal there because it's, you know, who cares about the one counter or something. I guess like Dave said, maybe the kind of more mid-rangey stuff like Asmo, Jund Saga or something like that, potentially. It also works with future sagas because you can make a construct, hit with the Jite, then use the ability to untap the saga. So that's kind of cool if that comes up.
I think that's really cool, actually, now that you mention it. To be able to, if you have a bunch of mana, make more than one construct a turn is kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, you used a good turn for this, right? Which this seems like a small ball card. Like, but it's like, you know, it's like the Cleveland Guardians, you know, hitting singles, having good pitching, hopefully. Ripperino, Shane Bieber. But yeah, I mean, you can see little opportunities for this to like do something, right? Like you said, like untap Urza Saga. I can see, you know, if the creature that you are equipping has some kind of 1/1 counter synergy where it's like you want to move a counter around, like in scales, or you want to. The removing a counter from that creature does something, or, you know, there's like a lot of like small things that this could potentially do, but maybe it could be much like the Cleaving Guardians, too small ball to be good.
Yeah, yeah. I think for me specifically, it's really good in the Renin 6 Saga decks because those are the decks that are most likely to have the second saga. Because you get this off the first one, you play the Ren, get the second saga back. The next turn, if you have a counter on Jite, that second saga you get back is already a chapter 2 to make that second construct in the one turn cycle. So good with in Renin 6 Saga decks like Jund Saga Fan, maybe Asmo decks, but not in the kind of hit you in one combat phase like Amulet and in Hammer Time. Yeah.
I fully agree. I guess the only thing I would go beyond that is, should we be looking at this untapped target land trigger any more closely? Because if you build up multiple, well, I'm thinking more about Nykthos or Coffers or something like that, which is like, because you can build up more than one counter on this and there's no activated cost or like limiting to the number of counters you can remove per turn.
Just go ham. Right?
So if, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there is some kind of shell out there that's like, I get Jite, I get it with Karn. I don't know. Like, this is, I'm going weird with this right now. But if there's something there, it's like, well, I can play an early phase where maybe I build up some counters on my Jite as a backup to something and then untap Nykthos a couple of times or untap some kind of land like that a couple of times and go crazy. But
I guess the issue there is that a lot of the Nykthos or Coffers decks don't necessarily play a lot of small creatures. I guess the one exception being Coffers with Bowmaster. So you can play an early Bowmaster, then the Bowmaster can help you hit with this.
But what about elves in Mono Green Devotion style decks? I mean, they are playing small creatures too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is me like extremely pushing the edges, but I do think you should take a look. That's the type of thing that I would take a look at here is like, if this is broken, it's probably the untapped target land trigger that's broken, right? I mean, the other ones are totally fair. Yeah. So
I like that.
Okay. Awesome. Devin, why don't you go next?
You want me to go next? All right. Yeah. Let us, I will go with the first one that I put on the list. So definitely still going in Wooburg order. Rather, we have World Walker Helm. This is a artifact that costs 2 and a blue. It says, if you would create one or more artifact tokens, instead create those tokens plus an additional map, and then you can pay a blue and a colorless and tap it to create a token that's a copy of target artifact token you control. So specifically, this card seems really good with constructs, right? Either Urza Saga, or there's actually a construct maker in Standard, which is Thousand Moon Smithy. Because I don't think this card is quite powerful enough to reach it in Modern, but you know, Smithy is a potentially a playable card in both Pioneer and Standard. And that's kind of where I like this, because especially once you flip the Smithy, every time you make the Smithy, you get another map, and then it just kind of gets out of control from there. So that's where I see this card.
I got to read Thousand Moon Smithy right now to see exactly. I don't.
It's
you don't know Thousand Moon Smithy?
I don't.
It's two white for a legendary, either artifact or enchantment. I think it's an artifact. ETB, you make a construct. And then during your upkeep, if you, or maybe it's draw phase, you can tap five artifacts to transform it. It transforms into a land that taps for white. And if you use that mana to play an artifact or creature spell, you get an additional construct.
Mm.
So it makes a construct on ETBs, flips if you have five, and then keeps making more constructs when you use that mana.
To cast other artifacts.
Or creatures. It counts artifacts and creatures.
This or creature spells. Oh, they're separate. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I mean, that's pretty interesting. And I guess the big thing here, too, is like three is a little expensive to cast this card, but two to create a token that's a copy of target artifact token you control is very priced to move, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I looked at the whole list. It took me forever, all these cards. And I was like, this is cool, but it does like stone nothing when it comes down. You know what I mean? So, like, you have to sort of be in a deck that can, you know, take a turn off or like be fine running this late. Like, you know, you just play this on five or something like that. And you're like, you know, you played a really nice, you know, something cool on turn four or, you know, earlier. And you're just in some kind of like deck that this is even like some part of the end game. Because like, I don't know how this is part of like an aggressive, you know, game or something like that. So
one card specifically that this works pretty well with, I guess it doesn't add colored mana, but the Enigma Jewel, which is a card that I've spent a little bit of time with in Standard, is the Soul Ring that only taps for activated abilities.
Right.
And this is an activated ability that requires mana. So, and it's also a cheap artifact to help fuel out the Smithy. So it kind of all works together. There have been people who have been playing these artifact based strategies in Standard. And I think if that deck is going to be playable, it's going to likely include this card.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting artifact synergies in this mini set. You know, like that's one of the sort of themes of the set is just like, you know, artifact stuff. And we've seen the power of weird artifact stuff. Like there's a card I'm actually pretty interested in and for like a funsies deck that I'm really excited to talk about. It's a bit of a tease there, but yeah, I think there's just a lot of stuff like that. Like these are parts of a whole, like going back to kind of like that question that you brought up again, Devin, is like, are any of these cards good enough to build decks around them? I'm not sure. Are these cards like parts of existing strategies or like maybe rogue strategies that are going to be more fun and more interesting? I think so. That's kind of how I see a lot of the stuff in this set.
Same.
Yep. All right. I got another blue artifact that I want to talk about because I think this card is a pretty easy one to talk about. So let's start here. Simulacrum Synthesizer, two generic and a blue. When Simulacrum Synthesizer enters the battlefield, scry two. Whenever another artifact with mana value three or greater enters the battlefield under your control, create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1 for each artifact you control. Blue affinity shells and Modern, anybody? Like, I mean, this is basically you're powering this out and then casting your thought monitor to be able to make a construct at the same time as your thought monitor, or you're casting your giant I don't even remember the name of the seven drops. You know,
Mirror Enforcer,
yes,
and the one that has land cycling. I don't remember
exactly
that one. But yeah, also Frogmite. This triggers off Frogmite.
Yes, exactly. So that's kind of what this felt like to me. Pretty clearly. Seems like it could work in a deck that is, you know, tier C in Modern, but still works pretty well sometimes. Thoughts? Incontrovertible. You guys have no counter case.
Well, I mean, much like the last card we talked about, right? Which is like, this is a 3-mana artifact that doesn't do a lot when it comes down.
It scries too, Shane.
Well, yes. I mean, it doesn't do a lot.
Scries too.
More than the last one.
Does more than last. That's true.
I think, like, you know, we've seen the value of construct token creators. Like we were just talking about Urza Saga. This, of course, is not Urza Saga. I think like this maybe takes a little bit long, like a little too long to get going. But like maybe again, if like you're in a slower deck and this is like your engine piece, then go for it. Or it's like, you know, like one of the potential issues, right? With like, let's say like a true affinity deck, where it's like, let's drop some cheap affinity creatures. And then we scale off those using our big affinity creatures that are now cheap, is like, you're just going to drop those. And what is dropping this getting you? So it's like, is there a strategy where there's an interactive component or like a chump blocker component, then you just take over the board with stuff like this?
I mean, I will say I played the blue affinity shell. I mean, it was probably a year ago now. I remember playing it with like Colossal Dreadnought first. What is that card? The like single mana, mana 7/11 that you like power up and play that out. Yeah, that whole thing. I kind of feel like in those decks, sometimes of course, you just play Thoughtcast in those decks and Thought Monitor. And so Scry 2 is pretty underpowered. But I think having something that's like a value engine in those decks so that if you just run out of gas, it's actually kind of nice for what it's worth. So maybe this is like for the grindy matchups, TM.
So I like this card quite a bit, maybe not necessarily in the modern context because 3 mana is kind of a bit of a tough sell, but going back to kind of the same standard application, remember that card that we just talked about, Thousand Moon Smithy? Imagine for a second, if you go turn 3, Simulacrum Synthesizer, turn 4, you deploy the Smithy, you have made 2 constructs. And if you have played any other stuff in the first couple of turns, you can then flip the Smithy next turn, use that mana, cast another thing, generate 2 more constructs.
Yeah.
So I think specifically in Standard, maybe Pioneer with Smithy, I'm going to be playing a lot of this card. I actually wanted to put this card on the list, but you guys put it on the list before me. So
there you go.
But I like it a lot in Standard, specifically with the aforementioned Smithy.
All right, just too slow for Modern. Even when we're doing other broken stuff with the rest of our cards, this is maybe not enough, but... makes sense.
Maybe, I mean, you can go like Springleaf Drum, 0 drop and play it on turn 2. And
yeah,
like, you know, that, like the nut draw, you could do like this turn 2, play a Frogmite, make a construct. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, if you do have the turn 1 drum, I could see maybe being good enough. But just like getting to 3 mana and casting it's, I don't know, it seems a little sus.
Yeah.
Have you heard the good news about Bristlebud Farmer? My friends.
Bristlebud,
man. 2 green. He's even green. Plant Druid, 5/5 with Trample. When the farmer enters the battlefield, you create 2 food tokens. And whenever Bristlebud Farmer attacks, you may sacrifice a food. If you do, mill 3 cards. You may put a permanent card from among them into your hand.
Do you guys remember Urnim Djinn?
I do.
He was a good friend.
Remember when that card was good?
Nettletooth Djinn.
Yeah, you used to get a card like this, you used to have to give another creature your opponent controlled Forest Walk in order to have a 4 mana 4/5.
Balduvian Hordes.
Oh, yeah.
This is 4 mana 5/5, my friend.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, 4 mana 4/5 for green. No drawbacks. All pluses here.
Yeah, I think this card's really cool. I don't think it's like, you know, again, it's not breaking the format. It's not blowing the doors off, but like there are like some rogue Golgari food style decks in Pioneer. Like remember when like Tough Cookie was spoiled and people were like, oh, like Tough Cookie, that could be part of like a cool, like food, like artifact, aggressive strategy type thing. Like, you know, these decks have like Feasting Troll King and Cauldron Familiar, you know, Tough Cookie, Wicked Wolf, stuff like that. I think that this is probably a part of those kind of decks. Like you have a good, you know, 4 mana 4 drop, you create a bunch of food for your other cards to be using. Like, I think it makes good sense there. I think that's sick.
I gotta tell you, Shane, you are very good at picking cards, because this, I when I saw this card, I actually didn't see it on the initial spoiler. And when I was looking over cards this morning to try and, or last night actually, to try and put cards onto the list, and this was one that I was just blown away by. I have been working on food decks in Pioneer for a little bit now. Like you mentioned, Cauldron Familiar, Witch's Oven. They recently got the 2 mana Tough Cookie. There's also been the black, I think it's like Greta Sweet Tooth. There's all of these good food cards. We're just missing that one payoff because Wicked Wolf was not enough. And this, I think, is that one. And the reason I like this card so much is because specifically with Troll King, the the mill three can dig you towards more troll kings. Yes, it just generates food. And like, it seems like there's just enough stuff there that I'm going to be trying some pioneer food decks out.
Yeah. I mean, and you like Golgari in general. And I know that you were doing that, Golgari sacrifice deck that, you know, we didn't hang on, but I played it. I took it to like a weekday event in Pioneer and had a blast playing it. So this seems up your alley for sure.
I do love this card too.
Yeah. This card is just absurd on rate. Like that's what it is, right? It's like, it's got tons, but that's what you needs to be a good card in Magic these days, I guess. It's like, we're going to make a giant creature with a great casting cost that does a bunch of extra stuff. And it still has to fit into a synergistic plan to be good. You know,
no more Juzum Jins, Dave.
I know. Oh man.
Gone.
This is actually closest to that almost. All right.
Who wants to go next?
I think it's your turn.
Yeah, it's your pick.
My turn?
It's your pick, too.
Let us scroll down to the list. Okay, I'm gonna throw you guys a bone one here. This is a reprint. It's a pretty easy one. folks listening to the podcast may have heard this card. It's called Torpor Orb. Torpor Orb is how you say it. It's a 2-mana artifact. It says creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. So for modern players, you're all used to this by now. Some people, yeah. It's actually kind of, I don't feel like I've seen a lot of people play it recently in Modern, but it's a reprint, as we mentioned, which means they are Standard and Pioneer legal. And I think this card, not only for Standard, because one of the dominant strategies in Standard is Atraxa decks, and shutting off the Atraxa ETB is very huge. Also, Boros Convoke, being able to shut off Imodine's Recruiter, Knight. You can shut off all the one drops. All that stuff is off the table. And then kind of the same thing in Pioneer, Boros Convoke. It might be a little bit slow against Convoke because it is 2-mana, but some people still play Hushbringer against Boros Convoke, so could be good there. And, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of other decks that it's good against, but yeah, banger sideboard reprint. Love it.
Pretty easy. I think just having this tool available in Pioneer is pretty, great. So
yeah, Standard too. It's massive.
I honestly don't own any of these, and this is just one of those moments where it's like, oh, it's a reprint that even though it's going to be kind of hard to get, it's probably going to make this card more affordable, so it might be good to just go and buy some.
Yeah, so maybe one of those like cheaper ones that brings the, you know, it's just sort of an eventuality that's a cheaper one.
Right.
Well, we said the Rest in Peace was pre-ordering for, what, $3 earlier, so
yeah,
this one probably can't be that much more, if anything less.
I think that's right. I haven't checked what Torpor Orb's got. Torpor Orb is $5.99.
Yeah, it went up. Like, it had, you know, whenever a weird sideboard card sort of comes back a little bit, like, they kind of weirdly spike sometimes. So it'd be nice to have a reasonably priced set of Torpor Orbs or something.
Yep. All right. Here's a card that I would like to talk about, because I kind of think this is another card that lots of people have been talking about here and made people very angry. Let's talk about Pest Control.
Oh, yeah.
Pest Control, white and a black. Sorcery, destroy all non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less, and it has cycling 2.
Do you like,
why does it have cycling?
Why 2? Does it have cycling?
Do you like how they're like, Orzhov is so bad for so long, we're going to give it a spell this good?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, this goes up against a lot of decks that I like to play, because I like to play aggressive Borosy decks, and this is sort of just like, especially in Pioneer, it's just like the sideboard card for Boros Convoke, basically. And I'm sure there's other things that it can hit as well, but non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less is actually quite a few things.
Oh yeah, like, you know, Hidetsugu consumes all, costs 3 mana. You often just kind of wanted the first effect more than the others, but like, those were just gravy on top of it. It kind of made it worth 3 sometimes, but man, this being 2 mana, it just seems like this is a really good, you know, card to have in your toolbox for when decks like Boros Convoke are running more rampant. I mean, the real thing is, you know, like I was saying or getting at, is that, you know, Orzhov or Orzhov based decks are typically less popular, and sometimes they wouldn't want to play this because they might be like, you know, let's say an Orzhov Humans deck or something like that isn't going to want to play this unless they sort of do some weird sideboarding maneuvers, but.
Yeah. And then sometimes I look at this too and go like, you wouldn't play this instead of Engineered Explosives in Modern, but it's maybe a little bit there where it's like, if Death Shadow style decks were good and lots of Rhinos were running around and you were in a deck where you needed some extra tech for those kind of things, it works against that kind of stuff. If food ever became a huge thing, but I guess in most cases, all of that stuff is just like you'd rather play Engineered Explosives and just kind of pay zero to bring it into play. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like I said, Hidetsugu consumes all, did in fact, you know, has seen modern play. I can see a world in, you know, which these multicolor decks that have so much access to so many different colors, even if they're sort of like, you know, consolidated around two or three colors, they might play a couple Triomes. This is kind of an easy inclusion. You just, you know, you get a Triome with black mana in it or something like that, and then you have a, you have an option.
What is nice about this card specifically compared to Engineered Explosives is if you're playing with, well, if you're playing both white and black, you probably have Grief and Solitude in your deck, and this pitches to both of them, which Explosives does not. So that is a pretty, you know, a kind of a big boon for this, because you know, that's the bio clause on top of the fact that it is cycling.
Yeah.
You pitches to itself.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Pitches to itself. It does pitch to itself. Specifically in Standard and Pioneer, you know, we've kind of been talking about Boros Convoke. I've been looking at the Standard. Well, the Standard metagame is different because the Esper's, you know, Esper slash Dimir is one of the most played decks. And if you wanted a reason to play, like, Dimir has been the more popular deck than Esper for the past maybe month or so. But, you know, with the printing of this, now that you have a more direct answer to Boros, it might be more popular to go back to Esper. But specifically in Pioneer, there's not really like a lot of white black decks towards the top of the metagame. It's like Vampires, Lotus Field, Phoenix. You know, the aforementioned Boros Convoke. So I don't really know which deck it slots into in Pioneer specifically, but, you know, definitely Esper and Standard is going to want this one for sure.
Yep. Good card. Good card is good. It's kind of what this one is.
Also, why does it have cycling? I will never know.
Just more value on top of your already pretty good value. All right. I think it's my draft pick. What do I want to talk about? Let's talk about this expensive card that might be expensive for Commander, but might have other applications. Let's find out. Generous Plunderer.
Yes.
One in a red. Human Rogue, 2/2 with Menace. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may create a treasure token. When you do, target opponent creates a tapped treasure token. Whenever it attacks, you deal damage. It deals damage to defending player equal to the number of artifacts they control. So, yeah, it's like 35 bucks.
It's got to be Commander.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that makes me think it's Commander-y is, one, I know Treasure is absurdly popular in Commander. Also, the fact that you can give a target opponent creating a tapped treasure token means that you can sort of pick your poison in a multiplayer game, right? So you can give it to someone who maybe you have like an allegiance with, or, you know, do some politics stuff, or you can just sort of add on to someone's artifacts to start beating them down, or, but yeah, I mean, does this have any sort of 60 card constructed application that you can think of? I mean, Treasure's good. I like Treasure.
The problem is it gives them treasure. Yes. Of course. Yes. Which is kind of a bigger negative in heads up play. I don't know. I put this card down. This is probably one of the cards when I first saw it spoiled that I was like, oh, we're actually going to have to talk about cards from Big Score. And then as the week went on, I was like, but maybe we don't have to talk too much about this one. Although, you know, something inside me wants to play a 2/2 Menace for 2 that makes a Lotus Petal. You know, it's like, I mean, just give me more.
That's, I mean, what are those? It's not Bergy, is it? Who makes the dragons out of Magda. Treasures?
Magda, yeah.
So we just add another thing to the Magda pile.
I think that if this card's going to be good, it's not going to be based off of the first line of text, rather the second line of text, kind of as a sideboard card.
Yeah.
Where if your opponent's making a boatload of artifacts, I don't know if it's fast enough against Hammer Time, probably not. But like the Asmo food decks could be good.
Anything if like Academy Manufacturer like ever becomes everywhere, yeah. Right?
We got you covered. Yeah. So like I could see this maybe being a sideboard card if those decks ever get popular. But I don't know, 2 mana. Even if it was 2 mana for a 2/2 that doesn't have haste, that has to, you know, wait another turn to get a treasure. Not a big fan of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. When I first read it, I was like, this is cool. And then I saw how much it was, and I was like, I'm, you know. Probably not.
But why?
All right, Devin, what's your third pick?
I am up next, and I I'll just go in order the way that I put them on there. I would like to draft Sandstorm Salvager. Probably a high pick in limited, so getting it this late is pretty nice. It is 2 and a green for a 1-1 creature human artificer. When it enters the battlefield, you make a 3-3 colorless golem artifact creature token. Tell me if you've seen a 3-mana 1-1 that makes a 3-3 artifact before. And then you could pay 2 and tap to put a +1/+1 counter on each creature token you control to gain trample until end of turn. So, I mean, you know, this obviously the obvious comparison is with Bladesplicer, which was a constructed staple for, you know, a while, even in up to and including modern. You know, it's fallen out of favor recently. But I could see this maybe being good enough for Pioneer. There's a couple of things that blink, specifically the card that I'm looking at is Guardian of Gyarpur, which is a 3-3 for 2 and a white has flying. When it ETBs, you just blink something you control and then bring it back to at the end of turn, rather. So it could be like something like Collect a Company adjacent, where you're hitting this, maybe also the Guardian to give you another 3-3. Probably not going to make the mark in Modern because Bladesplicer already doesn't, but I potentially good card for Standard and Pioneer if you can like figure out a way to blink it repeatedly. It's got good stats though. I like it.
I mean, I like that it does something else, because the big thing, the big move here is like, okay, you play your Bladesplicer, I bounce the token and leave you with a 1-1 that doesn't do anything. So having a second ability on it is kind of nice, even if it's an extremely narrow ability. You know, maybe if you get going, it gives your other Bladesplicers more to do.
Yeah, well, that's the thing too, because what you can also do with it, even if you're not synergizing with blinking the splicer specifically, what you can also do is generate, like, you can just have more token makers, right? Stuff like, you know, Resolute Reinforcements, you could do Wedding Announcement, there's plenty of Wandering Emperor, there's plenty of cards in Standard that makes tokens, and you could just have, like, a green-white tokens deck and have this as your just giant payoff, so you can kind of go both ways with it.
Yeah. All right, one card that I thought was interesting, and this is another one where I'm like, I think this card needs a home, but I don't know what its home would be, is Harvester of Misery, which is a black creature. It is 3 generic black for a 5/4 with menace that has, when it enters the battlefield, other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. And then also you can channel it, essentially. You can discard Harvester of Misery, pay a generic and a black. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. I just thought this card was interesting as, you know, it's not really cheap enough or broadly applicable enough for like Living End, for example, but being able to have something that discards to itself, is a removal spell, is a reasonable size threat with some evasion, just seems like there's a lot of stuff on this card that seems like it could be playable at some point in the future.
Yeah, it's like a removal spell that you get a buyout clause later of just having a 5/4 pseudo unblockable on turn 5 if your removal spell is not good enough.
Exactly.
And you could even like do some kind of reanimator shenanigans with it where you discard it early and then utilize that to come back. I wonder, it's probably a little bit too slow. I was thinking, is this ever something you would want to consider playing in Living End, where it's like you're utilizing it to kill, say, like a, you know, you're on the play, you kill a Ragavan with it, and then I guess it's killing the creature, which means they get it back. But you get a 5/4 menace back that also kills the Ragavan when it comes back into play. So it's a little slow, but maybe a little too slow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be in the consideration set for like different metas for Living End potentially, just because it discards, you know, and does something. It also, if you just play it on mana, on rate or cheated, and somehow it kills Phoenixes, which is kind of interesting. It just wipes the board of 3/2s, which could be maybe something for Pioneer potentially. But I don't know. There's lots of text on this card that I like.
I'm sort of seeing Murderous Rider in this, but I think I might like Murderous Rider more, because you get the, you know, the adventure. You always get the creature. One, you know, one and a black is cheaper than one and two black, that's for sure. But it, you know, that hits planeswalkers and any creature. So I'm just kind of like, I don't know if this is enough for me, but I like it.
Yeah, I think going to the graveyard is more powerful than going to the adventure zone, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I don't disagree there. I think that's so for sure.
That's I think the big part of this for sure.
I wish I had like flying for that much. It seems like I should have flying. Maybe a 4/4 flyer.
You're killing all their other creatures anyway.
That's a good point.
All right.
All right. It's
last round. Are we thinking this is the last round? Can we even get to 12 cards?
We've got a couple more.
Okay.
I mean, let's talk another reprint. Let's talk Grand Abolisher. Mm-hmm. White 2/2 classic hate pair, human cleric. During your turn, your opponents can't cast spells or activate abilities of artifact creatures or enchantments. So Grand Abolisher is legal in Modern. It's essentially zero play. Does this have impact in Pioneer? Is there some kind of like, is there a combo where you play this like later in the game and then go off? Like, I'm not personally aware of one, but I don't know. You tell me.
Well, there is a specific land in one of the more popular decks in Pioneer that taps for three colors of any mana.
Yes, it
and
does.
It also happens to tap for white mana.
Yes, so it does.
I could certainly see this being a card that Lotus Field wants to play. Now, to be fair, I don't know how frequently Lotus Field is playing against counter spells anyways, because a lot of the more commonly played hate is stuff like Damping Sphere, Extraction Effects, things like that, where you're not playing on your opponent's turn anyways, because the Lotus Field deck, for what it's worth, is, I think, historically reasonable against counter spells. You just have a lot of redundancy, so you typically would rather fight it on different axes, but there's maybe metagames where you would want to put this in your Lotus Field sideboard.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just looking to see if it's really getting, I mean, I didn't think it was getting any play in Modern. I don't see any decks that have it going on. So that totally makes sense. I mean, I think this is definitely just a Commander print, because at one point in time, this was, you know, this was a $30 card and now it's a $7 card.
Yeah. I was thinking for like the Mono White Humans decks, you know, obviously it is a human, but the issue with those decks is the counter spells are already not that great against humans decks, because typically you're trading down on mana. You're trading, you know, two or three mana for your counter spell for one or two mana for their creatures. So you already kind of don't care about counter spells in the first place. You care way more about the wraths, and this does not protect you against wrath.
No, not at all. And even like Dranith Magistrate is more useful, right? Because it does, it messes up people's proactive game plans, other things. So,
right.
I don't know.
All right.
Okay.
Me?
Devin, what do you got?
All right, we got two left. I don't know if we have time for both of them, but let's go with Legion Extruder. This is a red and colorless 2-mana artifact. When it enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage to any target, and you can pay 2, tap it, and sacrifice another artifact to make a 3/3 colorless golem artifact creature token. So
that's cheap. These are cheap costs,
right? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like you're spending 2 mana to get the shock, which is maybe a little above average, but not too much more. And then 2 mana to sacrifice another artifact to make a 3/3. That, you know, 2 mana 3/3, that's definitely above rate. So you're spending a little bit more for the shock, but you're getting it back when you make the 3/3. What's really cool is I like that this can kind of go both ways, where you can synergize. I don't know how much stuff there is that blinks this, but you can find stuff that blinks it. And then also, you know, in like the Rakdos sacrifice deck that's generating extra artifacts, maps, and foods and all that stuff, it's really good in that, because you're also sacrificing to get Mayhem Devil triggers and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, this isn't really a 2-mana 3/3, which is like, you know, what you might expect to pay most of, like, for a good card anymore. Your Fleece Mane Lions or whatever. This is a 2-mana 3/3 that uses hopefully free pieces of cardboard. You know what I mean? Like, you're not actually casting a spell. You're turning, map tokens or treasure tokens or blood tokens probably into stuff that's potentially more useful and more on rate. And like you said, perhaps synergizing with Mayhem Devil, getting you more pieces of cardboard that can then get sacrificed to Witch's Oven or something like that, right? Like, if you don't need to be attacking with it, like you could chump block, you could use it for more sacrifice fodder and some kind of sacrifice deck. So you're really using your game objects in a more powerful way with something like this.
Yeah. A lot of stuff you can do with this card. And I plan on casting it a lot. I like this one.
Yeah.
It looks sweet.
All right. Can I throw out a card that I think is just funny and interesting, since we're coming to the end of this and probably, and definitely not good. And it's not on the list right now. So I'm not going to even pull from the list.
Ooh. Uh-oh. We're doing a live
Memory Vessel.
Oh,
3 generic red for an artifact. Tap, exile Memory Vessel. Each player exiles the top 7 cards of their library. Until your next turn, players may play cards exiled this way, and they can't play cards from their hand. Activate only as a sorcery. funny to see a memory jar callback in the year of our Lord 2024, but obviously not doing the same things that card did. But this is never anything, right? It's just too expensive, too weird. This is too commandery to do anything in any of the formats we care about.
Maybe if Karn wasn't banned in Pioneer, I could maybe see something cooking up with that. Like, I don't know. I don't know exactly what it would look like, but yeah, without Karn in Pioneer, probably doesn't have any standard applications. I can't imagine it's good enough for Modern.
Yeah.
It's a cool card though. I like it.
This is just a card that reminds me of my youth. So I thought I would mention it here. Doesn't synergize with Megrim though, the way that memory.
Yeah. Memory also doesn't work with Narset.
Yep. Yes. That's the thing. Let's talk about Esoteric Duplicator, please. Please, y'all. 2 in a blue. Clue artifact. Whenever you sacrifice Esoteric Duplicator or another artifact, see more artifact sacrifice synergies, you may pay 2 generic mana. If you do, at the beginning of the next end step, create a token that's a copy of that artifact. You can also pay 2, sacrifice Esoteric Duplicator, and draw a card. So you can use it as a clue. And then when you do, it just comes back at the beginning of your next end step. So, or any other artifact you sacrificed. So this is a decent amount of like sort of quote unquote free card draw in a deck that if you have the mana for it, right? And that's potentially interesting, but it also is doing other things that are potentially worthwhile along the way. But I don't know.
It's a weird one.
All I know is I read this card like 5 times before I fully got it. Cause I was like, wait, if you pay the 2, then you draw a card and copy it. No, you just copy it. So it does become this thing where you're like, do I want to have something with a good ETB to be able to copy as opposed to what I originally thought was just clues and blood tokens and treasure tokens and that kind of stuff. Like, but treasure tokens obviously don't do, cause it's just like you're making mana and then you pay 2 and you get your mana back. And that's kind of weird unless you want to make some kind of loop out of it essentially. So yeah, I don't know. This card is weird.
I think the paying 2 on it is a bit, makes it a little bit sus for me. Like you just have to spend so much mana to keep fueling it. It is kind of cool that it's with itself. It's just kind of like a personal Howling Mind if you're willing to spend the extra mana on it.
I think they used to call these JM Day tomes. You paid four to draw, right?
This is 2024 tome. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if there's like, I'm trying to think of what other artifacts that you could sacrifice, like construct tokens, but then you could just not sacrifice your construct token to begin with and then keep the construct token. So it's like, it's just trying to figure out what exactly this is supposed to be played with. Unless the joke is that it's supposed to just be played with itself and you just keep copying it over and over again.
Yeah, that might be quite slow. It might not be right. It might not be worth it there.
Yeah.
Especially because it's yet another 3-mana artifact that does nearly nothing when it comes down. This one does stone nothing. So
I was going to say it, but I'm glad you said it yourself.
Devin, I have a quick question for you.
I have a quick answer for you.
Is Rest in Peace important in Standard right now or no?
Kind of. There are some graveyard decks that kind of pop up from time to time. There's Squirming Emergence. I don't know if you remember that, but it's BG1.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, the Delirium adjacent card. So people sometimes play that. There are also like Cruelty of Gix Reanimator decks, but they're not super duper popular. Past that, there's like, oh, actually, no, I'm forgetting one of the most important ones, the Teemer lands deck, which is the one that plays Aftermath Analyst and Splendid Wreck. So,
oh, right.
Yeah, that I don't know if Rest in Peace makes that deck like stone cold unplayable because you already had Hearse. But yeah, I think it should make a pretty big impact, at least on that deck.
Interesting.
There are a few more cards I think we could talk about.
I can do my last one.
Yeah, do it. That's one of the ones I want to talk about.
All right. Greed's Gambit.
This was close to being on my list.
Me too. I'm a big fan of this one.
Yeah.
All right. So 3 and a black enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you draw 3 cards, gain 6 life, and create 3/2/1 black bat creature tokens with flying. That's it. That's the whole card. Wait, there's more.
Oh, there's more.
At the beginning of your end step, you discard a card, lose 2 life, and sacrifice a creature. And when Greed's Gambit leaves the battlefield, you discard 3 cards, lose 6 life, and sacrifice 3 creatures. So, this card is a lot, right? You know, when it enters the battlefield, you get so much value off of it. You just get everything.
You're greedy.
But the way that you have to think about this card, the way that I'm kind of envisioning this, is you want to be able to take the material that you're getting off of the turn that you play it. You get one end step trigger. So you basically just like say, if you knock off one of each of those, like if it's just draw two, gain, you know, gain four and make two ones, can you use that material the next turn after you go through one end step, you know, to kill your opponent? Because once you get more turns with it, that's where it obviously becomes like pretty bad.
Yeah, it's a good, I mean, it's a lot of stuff in your hand and it's a lot of fodder, whether it's, you know, six damage in the air or whether it's a bunch of sacrifice abilities that are doing something that's worth having the three bats on there or.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, too, it's not that hard to turn the end step trigger into a thing that you like doing.
Right.
Like, it's not that hard to be like, yes, I do want to discard this card and put it in my graveyard or, you know, to whatever, fuel delirium or, you know, whatever, like you said, delirium adjacent effects that there are. It's the same thing with sacrifice. Like, if you were to play this with something like Mayhem Devil or, you know, for that matter, Esoteric.
Unlucky Witness.
Yes. Well, you went the right way. I was going to say Esoteric Duplicator. You can say, sacrifice an artifact creature, pay two, bring it back. Not really. But, you know, there's plenty of ways to turn sacrificing something into a benefit one time. It's the leave the battlefield trigger that, of course, is risky. And, you know, that's the joke and that's what the card's good for.
Well, think about it this way, right? If you play it and they kill it the turn you play it, it's just even, right? You broke even. So if they're even incentivized where if they have a disenchant, they have to like not use it on their end step because they want to get max value out of it. So it's kind of this weird cat and mouse game where, you know, they don't necessarily want to kill it right away. They want to give you a little bit of value, but if they give you too much value, then maybe you can find means to kill them. So it's a really, really sick design.
Yeah. I mean, there's other things too. You can just play all the cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can just be empty-handed.
And then you're just playing Hellbent and then who cares if you have to discard three cards.
Yeah, I think this one has a lot of potential. Big fan. Rakdos Sacrifice, I think, is probably the easiest home for it, because like you said, Mayhem Devil, Unlucky Witness, all this stuff that you Cauldron Familiar, you don't care about sacrificing any of this stuff.
Right. So.
Yeah, I think this is solid. I think there is a home for this card, and it might be something like, what's that sort of Orzhov-based an enchantment deck that they'll play that thing that makes you like sacrifice
Foretold.
Yes, it's like, you know, it's like maybe like Doom Foretold adjacent, where it's like maybe more annoying than good, but I'm perfectly fine with people making annoying decks from time to time, so.
Not me.
You definitely don't seem like you are. And I mean, honestly, when I play against them, I'm not. Like if you know, back when 9 Lives, you know, was popular on Arena or something like that, and I was playing more Arena, not my favorite. The Sword of Wealth and Power. 3 mana, equip 2, artifact, equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+2, has protections from instant and sorceries. I remember, I believe that we were there when they spoiled this in, when we were in Chicago,
not Atlanta. Yes.
And we were like, oh, this does this have play? Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, create a treasure token. When you next cast an instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. So the combat damage is not attached to the instant or sorcery spell this turn, right? That's just sort of an extra clause, or does it have to deal the combat damage in order for you to choose new targets for a copy of your instant or sorcery spell?
I would assume you have to hit them.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a period in between those things. Yes, I think you have to hit them too.
Okay. So this is pre-ordering for $40. 40/40, but I'm not sure if this is a 60 card constructed playable piece of cardboard. I'm not sure.
Commander.
I mean,
I was wondering a little if this is like modern playable or standard playable, because swords are sometimes pretty good in standard because they do a lot of things for not that much mana.
We've had believe it or not, Dave, you might be surprised as to hear this, but we've had a sword in standard for a year and a half now.
Oh, right. We have.
The red green one.
We have.
I tried that card at first and, you know, Standard and Pioneer when it first came out, and it read pretty powerful.
It did.
And
it read
I think
good.
This one also does read somewhat powerful, but I don't know. It's just if you're not cheating them into play or cheating the cost somehow with like a Stoneforge or a Piercedale Paladin, swords are just, they're just not what they used to be.
It's three, you know? Three mana equipped too. It takes a little while to get going there.
And removal is a lot more popular and more efficient. So it's a lot more of a blowout if you're spending three and two over the course of two turns to just trade with a cut down or something. Like you can't afford to do that.
I mean, it has protection from all instants and sorceries.
Well, they kill in response is what I'm saying.
Right. So you got to watch your window. Yes. So.
Yeah, I'm going to watch my window as I throw this card out.
Someone we know is going to want these. If you open one, you're going to be able to get them.
I'm sure. I feel like this is an aspiring spike card. I feel like he's going to play with this one.
Interesting.
Maybe. I don't know.
All right.
It just reads like it is.
I want to go out of the spoiler section with another aspiring spike-esque card. And Dave, you put this on the list. And I was like, this is fun. This is perhaps the most fun card. Loot, the key to everything. Naya color. No, it's green, blue, red. So Teemer. It's a Beast Noble 1/2 with Ward 1. And at the beginning of your upkeep, you exile the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of card types among other non-land permanents you control. So basically not lands and not loot. You may play those cards this turn. This thing dies to a stiff breeze, but if you untap with it, maybe you're doing something.
I mean, it draws three cards a turn. Right? Two or three cards a turn, let's say.
I mean, other card types? Like, so what do you have? Like, besides
creature, artifact, you know? Legend.
Okay.
Legendary a card type?
I don't think so.
I don't think it is.
It's not.
Okay. So it's like you could really easily get creature and artifact.
Which is like, that's not that great. Two cards.
What's really unfortunate is it says among other non-land permanents you control, the freest way to get an enchantment in play would be Saga. Now, I guess Saga wouldn't cast this anyways because it's green, blue, red, but that one's off the table, unfortunately. Bauble? Bauble's a zero mana artifact.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not thinking modern, but it's cool. It's cool.
I mean, especially since its effect is not game winning, like this is just a value engine.
Yeah, sure.
Basically, I think it's probably more like, hey, I made this cool Pioneer deck and I draw a ton of cards with an enchantment. And like, actually, one thing I was looking at with this was like boggles. Oh. Is it like, oh, am I playing this with auras and artifacts and
in
this
your
guy?
Teemer auras, like, deck?
Yeah, some kind of weird Teemer auras deck.
Five color auras.
I mean, in Pioneer, if you just go turn one elf, turn two this... Right, you're say you're on the play or whatever, you probably untap with it on turn two, and then turn three you immediately get the one card out of it because you already have an elf in play. I mean, there maybe could be something there, and some kind of like teamer collected company beatdown adjacent strategy with elves and three drops and stuff. I guess you have to spread the card types around, but even if you're only getting one card out of it, it's like still just a, you know, a JM Day Tome is not the end of the world, but the body is kind of tough. The body's like,
yeah,
that's what scares me away on this one.
That's why they put Ward 1.
Hmm. So you got to spend two mana to kill it and not one mana.
You know what? If you suit it up with some of the auras that you're drawing off of it,
that's true.
It's harder to kill. Put that Curious Obsession on it. Make loot do all kinds of stuff. I don't know. It's an interesting little card.
All right. I think that's everything that I thought was potentially interesting out of this little micro set.
Yeah.
Because I'm editing this one, we're going to keep this one tidy. Let's spend, you know, 5-10 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about Doom's Pure Modern tournament that happened this past weekend, sponsored by Heavy Play.
Let's do it.
So, Debbie, give us a little bit of background on these. Like, cause people might have heard about these before, but what was like the motivation, the incentive, the interest in putting together this idea, and what is like, how does it actually execute itself?
So the first one of these that I held was, I think, sometime way back in like late 2022, I think this is the fifth one of these that I've had. And kind of the genesis, the whole idea, the concept behind it was, you know, it was at a time where I was maybe a little bit more frustrated with Modern and just the Horizon sets in general.
Yeah, I remember that time. I remember the Doom angry at Modern times. I was this guy's angry.
Now, you know, the kind of the concept behind it was, you know, modern as a format was back when it was generated back in 2011 was intended to, you know, go back to Darksteel and just include the standard sets. Now, obviously, that changed with the introduction of MH1, MH2 and Lord of the Rings. But kind of the idea behind the format was to see what the format would have hypothetically looked like if it weren't for those supplemental sets. So if we had just gone through the normal trajectory of modern, which is, you know, the standard sets and standalone sets and things like that, what would the format look like? And it's been pretty interesting to see now that we've had five of these tournaments where the metagame, you know, after the first one, Dredge won the first one, and it was like Dredge, Amulet Titan, you know, Tron, more linear decks. And it, I would say that, you know, we've kind of evolved the metagame each individual tournament. But it is, we got to find the best way to fix this. It is still a lot of linear decks. And I think that, you know, we're going to try and figure out like how do we fix that? Like, is there some sort of fan list that we can do?
Or something like,
I see better interaction.
No, go on. Keep going.
But yeah, I mean, so just to give you an example, the most played deck in this fifth one, the most played deck on Sunday was Mill, and there was no Mill decks in top eight.
Mill.
So yeah, surprisingly. So that, you know, the kind of the evolution was that the first one was won by Dredge. The second one was won by Abzan Collected Company Devoted Druid kind of style deck. So the third one was won by Grixis Death Shadow. And then the fourth one was won by Amulet Titan. So what you kind of, and you can imagine where now that the fifth one, the most played deck was Mill, it's because people were metagaming for the previous one, which was won by Amulet Titan. Mill's good against Amulet. So it's kind of interesting to see the metagame evolve over each of the events. Now, again, that being said, the metagame is evolving, but the format is still kind of linear, which is, I guess, what you would expect, because if you look at modern pre-MH, it was a lot of, you know, look at modern before MH2. It was a lot of Heliod and Prowess. And that's kind of what's going on here. And other than, you know, reintroducing, like you said, the elementals and stuff, I'm not sure there's a good way to fix that. So for as much as I don't like the Horizon sets and what they did to the format, they did kind of give you some more interaction, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny when I look at this list, I'm like, this is just a huge list of decks that I would like to play, or at least I can see the sort of the bodies of several decks that I did play. Like, is it Prowess won the tournament, and it was, you know, there's one copy of that in the top eight. There's an Azorius Spirits list in ninth place. There was a fork. There's a Nahiri list. Is there two Nahiri lists, or is there just one?
Just one's the one.
Jeskai Control. Oh, the other one's just straight up Jeskai Control, which I definitely played for a long time in Modern. There's a Taxes list, which I played for a good amount in Modern as well. Oh, this is a different kind of Taxes, but
this, I love the Amalia combo deck. That's like literally just Pioneer Amalia with a single Noble Hierarch and four Oriach Champion. So there's some lands. There's like Horizon Canopy and stuff, but
that's honestly the funniest part about this tournament is if you kind of get look over the top eight and top 16 and look at the deck list, there was a lot of just Pioneer decks, right? Shane mentioned Amalia. There was two Boros Convoke decks, one in the hands of Mason Esports Clark in the top eight. There was Rakdos Vampires.
Three Azorius. Rakdos Vampires in the top 15, Devin.
Yes.
Three.
Oh my gosh. Is it like just like Rakdos Vampires plus fetch lands?
Literally. Yeah.
That's
literally
what it looked like.
There
to
was like
me.
One Terminate. Yeah. Something like that.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like, that's kind of, and I wonder if that's just a product of people. It's maybe a product of the cards that are powerful in other formats do somewhat translate well in a format where there's no, like, you know, none of the free spells and stuff like that. And there's less pressures in the format with like Urza Saga and all these things. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just to kind of give the listeners at home a breakdown. The top eight, I'll just kind of read them off in terms of seeding. In the one seed at the end of the event, there was two 501s. One of them was Kephis Combo. The other one was Five Color Humans. Like, if you, honestly, the Five Color Humans deck, if you went back to, what was the Pro Tour where Humans won? It was like 2017, I think, or something like that. It was just like copy-pasted that exact list.
Yeah, there's no new cards in this list.
No.
Well, there's two Adeline and two Copper Coat Vanguard. But.
True. Yeah. And then there was a Titan Creativity deck, which is Primeval Titan, Fable the Mirror Breaker, Indomitable Creativity, Scape Shift, and then Ramp Spells, and then four copies of Monvoli Acid Moss. That was kind of funny.
Yes.
The Is It Prowess deck that Dave mentioned, that one did win the tournament. This is old modern staple Stormwing Entity. When's the last time you saw that card?
Oh my God, I love Stormwing Entity so much. So good. Love it was only there for a season, Devin. It was like 6 months Not of even. Stormwing Entity and then we're done.
Yeah.
But
invalidated by Solitude. And then, yeah, the Amalia combo deck in sixth place. This is, I guess there are some upgrades to Modern from Pioneer. You got Oriok Champion, you got Birds of Paradise, Eternal Witness. Oh, I didn't
see the bops.
Yeah, those are kind of the main upgrades.
And the land base, mana base, of course.
Yes, yeah. The two Boros Convoke decks, which I think are, if I'm looking, entirely Pioneer legal with the exception of Memnite and Goblin Bushwhacker. Everything else, I think, is basically just the Pioneer deck.
Kaldotha Rebirth. They have eight. There's eight Gleeful Demolitions in these decks. Yes.
Kaldotha. And then the Rakdos Vampires deck in eighth place. So, yeah, a lot of Pioneer decks, a lot of kind of old modern decks. And, you know, I think that's just kind of the general vibe where the a lot of people who are maybe not necessarily enjoying current modern, but they have kind of this, you know, if they have whatever reason they don't like the current modern format. And this is a nice place to play your kind of your old pet deck that was used to be playable and no longer is.
Do you think that how hard are people trying here? Like, are people like, you know, are they trying to break the format? Are they trying to have some fun?
No.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that people are trying to break the format. I'm sure if we did these weekly and scaled prizes, then, you know, if there was more incentives for people to do so. Like if this is one of those things where if you keep it small scale, the metagame kind of evolves at its own pace rather than making this bigger scale and actually giving people bigger events and more reason to play it, because that's where formats break down very quickly. So, you know, and I've only had these very sparingly, right? I haven't had a ton of them. And the specific reason for that is I don't want people to get burnt out. You know, a lot of people who participate in these events and people who watch the events, I had people who, like I said, the viewership was unbelievable over the course of the weekend. And a lot of the people that said they just had like a great time. It's very good to see this kind of fresh take or, you know, a new spin on the format, where maybe they're not quite as they're getting a little stale. Maybe they're getting a little bored of current modern, and it's a nice change of pace. Now, when I say change of pace, I literally mean change of pace, because the average game lasted probably like 5 or 6 minutes. But you know, that's the unfortunate part, and we got to figure out a way to fix that. But I had a blast. Again, shout out to Heavy Play for sponsoring it, and yeah, love it.
What has this taught you or made you think about the design of like Modern Horizons and kind of the way that they're trying to craft modern using the Modern Horizons sets? Like, it seems like, you know, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but you know, you're saying that there's some linear decks here, and perhaps like, you know, some of the elementals or some of the free spells like has allowed people to have tools to sort of fight back against these decks. But anything else that you've thought about in like running or being involved in like kind of this format?
So, it's kind of hard to say where I think there is a middle ground where it's, you know, I was very kind of vocal about not liking the free spells in modern, because I've said that in the past where I don't necessarily think that that's the place for it. But, you know, at the same time, if you look at, like I said, if you look at this metagame, it's a lot of linear decks. And I think that's what a lot of people's sentiment was. So it's, you either have no free spells and all linear decks, or all free spells and a lot of, there's maybe less linear decks in current modern. They're linear, but they have more interaction points. And I kind of wish there was maybe some way to meet in the middle where it was, you know, some of the free spells are a little too pushed. Grief, Fury, the elementals potentially could have been toned down a little bit. And, you know, there is a time and a place for stuff like that, where specifically if your goal is to reduce the amount of linear games, there's a way to make reactive free spells that don't necessarily also have the buyout clause of being proactive cards. And I think that's my biggest issue, where, you know, I would like there to be interactive cards, but I don't want them to kind of synergize with other stuff like the elementals do. Maybe that's, I get, basically what I'm saying is that I hate the elementals. Mm-hmm. It's kind of where I'm getting.
Yeah.
But
they're worse than the pitch cards, right? Yeah. Like they, just because they do so many extra things that are maybe unintended consequences of what they were trying to do with them.
Yeah. And that's kind of like Force of Negation, Force of Vigor, I think would be like relatively, I think they would be relatively good additions to a format like this, where, and that's the perfect card. That's the kind of card that I want. I want a explicitly reactive pitch card, because that is where you kind of want it. You want to be able to react to the people who are doing the linear things, where, at, you know, it's not like necessarily that Fury and Grief were like that for, those aren't reactive cards, right? You're pairing those. And maybe that's just because of the cards that you're pairing them with, but yeah, long story short, I like the designs that are interactive and interact with the linear stuff. And I think maybe that's what this format could use, right? That's what the pure modern format could use.
Yeah. Last question before we go out. Why do you think Prowess won? Just question. Like, how do you think that was made it? How did it navigate its way through? Is it a mix of having cheap counter spells and threats, or what do you think helped it rise to the top?
Well, I mean, if you look at the metagame, right, we said that Mill was kind of the most popular deck, and mm-hmm. Prowess historically has been pretty good against Mill because it's just a little too fast for it, and you have the bolts to be able to clear the crabs. And then if you kind of look at the other, maybe slightly more popular decks, like a deck like Rakdos Vampires, maybe not as good of a Prowess matchup. And then kind of looking down the list, there was a couple of Amalia decks, which seems like a feast for Prowess, to be honest with you. And yeah, I don't know, just like the if the format is going to be a lot of creature-based linear strategies, kind of like your Spirits and your Boros Convoke and your Amalia, yeah, that seems like a good place for Prowess to be, because it's just, you know, the cheap removal and some creatures that hit very, very hard, like Spray Dragon and Storming Entity. So I think it was just a product of the metagame was kind of perfect for Prowess.
Yeah. If Gutshot is good, Prowess can be good, right?
I'm looking at this list and I'm like, why not just play Infect? I feel like maybe we're working harder to get to 20 than we might need to do to get to 10 with like the same core idea, but maybe I'm thinking about this wrong.
I will say the Prowess core certainly gets a little bit worse without stuff like Lava Dart, but I mean, you know, you're replacing that with more free spells in the form of Gutshot, Mutagenic Growth. I was a little surprised to see the Prowess list not play Bauble, because it's, yeah, you know, Bauble seems like a free spell. You're not synergizing with Dragon's Rage Channeler, but I mean, it is still a free spell that replaces itself and triggers Prowess. So I was a little surprised not to see that. But yeah, I mean, this list just looks very, 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 very clean. It looks very, very good. Preordains, Expressive Iterations, you still get to play Bolts, all the Prowess creatures. Just a very, very efficient and extremely powerful deck. I mean,
for what it's worth, I think that probably it's because it doesn't work with Storming Entity.
That is true.
And in this world, that's what you're trying to do. It's like, how many games, how fast can we cheat out Storming Entity, you know, and hold something else, hold things down with cheap removal.
Storming Entity, the best card in 2021, also the best card in 2024.
Perfect.
We've loved come it. Full circle.
My friends, you want to make this a light one? We had a 2-hour one last week. Let's keep this one tidy. 70-75 work for you?
Sounds good.
Sure.
Sweet.
We're just going to talk about Balatro for another hour. Yeah, after the microphone's off, so it's all good.
Devin, I'm sure when you run your next Pure Modern tournament, we will we can talk about it. We didn't tell people about it last week, I feel like we did not give it its proper promotion. But if you are interested in things like Pure Modern, or if you're interested in awesome streaming of Arena, Pioneer, Modern, check out Doomwake Stream on Twitch, D00MWAKE. And yeah, so be involved in that in the future. But that wraps up this week's show. If you haven't yet, please make sure you subscribe to our podcast. You get those latest episodes as soon as they come out. If you use Apple Podcasts, feel free to leave us a rating or a review there, or, you know, shout at us on Spotify. We look at those comments. Sometimes we laugh at those comments. Sometimes we question just what you're saying. If you want to submit a question to us, reach out to us. You can give us a tweet at the Dive Down or email the divedown@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, head on over to the Patreon, patreon.com/thedivedown. You can check out the store for some swag at thedivedown.com/store. You can go to Heavy Play, get some awesome deck and dice boxes and play mats featuring the EquipMag system. You can use code thedivedown2024 for 10% off that first order. Of course, Mana Traders, a longtime affiliate of ours, you can use the promo code thedivedown_K4L, all one word, for 10% off of your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards. As always, special thanks to the bands Nowhere and Spaceblood for letting us use their music. And until next week, get out there and open a single mythic in a pack.
The third one was won by, I'm trying to remember, hold on, cut this part out.